It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
Well, welcome everybody to today's show. My name is Mark Kohler, your host. Excited to be here with you. I'm just pumped about this topic for today's show and want to welcome all of you that may be new listeners and returning listeners. All of you, welcome. My name is Mark Kohler, attorney, CPA, author, family man, scoutmaster, just trying to hold it all together like many of you entrepreneurs, trying to live the dream, trying to just get all that work in during the day so I can find a little play time. So thank you for spending some of your valuable time with me, and I hope, and I know you will find something valuable in today's topic. This is going to be powerful today. On today's show, we are talking about how to protect our home from a lawsuit, how to protect us in the event there's a problem, some creditor coming after us. How do we protect that equity in our home? So we're going to dive into that shortly. Excited to be here with you. And we have a panel that I'll be introducing here shortly as well to help us discuss all this topic and more. So thank you again for being here. Now, if you're a new listener, I've got all sorts of announcements that we go through initially, kind of the news, if you will, from our perspective, and go through the newsletter for a quick moment. For those that haven't opened your email today, or maybe it's been a few weeks and you're just catching this on podcast, there's usually a few important announcements that I like to talk about and just kind of make sure everybody's up to speed and has the most recent information that might be helpful. So today, I guess I'd just like to highlight that this week is our Strategic Wealth Alliance that is on tomorrow night on Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. Pacific. This is a webinar I do once a month. I prepare specific information to go through for an entire hour. I share my computer screen. It's recorded. You can watch and listen to it over and over again. And it takes a lot of extra effort. There's also in the bank of webinars about 15 to 20 webinars on a variety of topics where I really try to go beyond what I would cover in a normal workshop or even on a radio show. So this is stuff that I think many of you will find valuable. And tomorrow's topic is building corporate credit, building personal credit, maximizing the two of them, and I have two experts coming on the show, and we're going to be sharing, again, screens and slides and really diving into a lot of helpful information. So it's $20 a month to be a part of this, and you access all the old webinars, and if you miss it tomorrow night, you can watch it on the recording. It'll always be in the bank as soon as you're in the program. And so rather than pay $300 or $400 for an hour of advice with some expert on credit or with someone in our office, even for $20, you get a full hour. You can watch it over and over again. So if you want to sign up for that, you can go to the website, markjkohler.com, sign up for the Strategic Wealth Alliance webinar series, or even just call the office and say, hook me up. So tomorrow night, Wednesday, the 25th at 6 p.m. Pacific. And if you miss it and you're hearing this presentation on podcast and you're like, oh, my gosh, for $20, I can spend that time on corporate credit and personal credit, then you just need to call the in the office and sign up or go to the website, and you can still catch it on recording. So I think you'll enjoy that. Also, just a couple workshops. The summer is very light for us on upcoming live events, but it really heats up in September, October, November. We'll be announcing all sorts of locations that we're going to be going in the fall, from Arkansas to New Jersey to Hawaii, Sacramento. I'm just closing my eyes thinking of all these, Orange County. So please keep your eyes open for that. And we'll be wrapping up the fall workshop series in Hawaii on December 13th. I know that date for sure because I'm looking forward to it myself. And if you want to get a tax write-off and learn some tax year-end strategies and asset protection tips for the year and get continuing education credit, have a great time. We'll be in Hawaii on December 13th. Please come over. You could probably write off a good portion of your trip, if not all of it, depending on how long you stay. We're going to be doing a variety of workshops and little extra activities as well, probably a little surfing on the North Shore. We're going to have some fun. So if you want to start putting that on your calendar and you want more info, please call and talk to my assistant, Elizabeth Phillips. She's my personal assistant. She can give you more information on the details. So if you do want to book airfare or hotel and you want to make sure what's going on, that is December 13th. You'll hear more about it. See some emails, I'm sure. Excited about it. Okay, now also, before we dive into our topic for the day, there was some really kind of interesting updates in the newsletter that I want to highlight for some of you. The one that is kind of, I tried to make a little humorous, is the new Taxpayer Bill of Rights announced by the IRS. And this was picked up by CNN and some of the major news outlets, but that is true. The IRS, under the new commissioner of the IRS, who came from the corporate world trying to dress up the IRS and make them more user-friendly as well, they just issued and published the new Taxpayer Bill of Rights so that you have, I don't know, more, I guess, access to information and support that you need. And I provided a link directly to the Bill of Rights so you can look at it. And if you're in any problems with the IRS, that's a great place to study up on what some of your options are. Of course, we can help walk you through that too, but it's a great place to start some reading. The other thing that I just want to highlight is that some IRA issues. The self-directed IRA strategy is, obviously something we teach and constantly are preaching. And so we have articles a lot of times related to the IRAs. We want people to be maximizing and shifting strategies, kind of doing that Mitt Romney, build our IRA as fast as possible so we can retire a little sooner strategy. Not a bad one, right? So two little tidbits, and this has to deal with dying in IRAs. There was a Supreme Court case that just came down this month, and good news and bad news. The bad news is that if you get into bankruptcy or a lawsuit, an inherited IRA is not as protected as a regular IRA. So let me repeat that. Many of you know from my O.J. Simpson chapter in my book, Lawyers or Liars, that your IRAs and 401ks are protected in almost every instance, unless the government's coming after you for IRS debt or maybe a divorce or child support. But that's about it. And this is how O.J. Simpson, through all of his colored history here, and it's just crazy from court battle to court battle, he's been able to keep his retirement account. Well, the new rule is, however, if you inherit someone's IRA, that inherited IRA is not as protected as if it was yours. So just keep that in mind. We're now talking to families that have inherited an IRA but have a very risky business or potential lawsuits. They may use a different strategy for that IRA rather than thinking it's rock solid, bulletproof. So be cautious there. And the other quick note that's on a good note is that when you do inherit a Roth IRA, even if your trust is the beneficiary, a new IRS decision allowed the spouse to roll that over into her Roth IRA. So when you pass away, we recommend that you put your revocable living trust as the beneficiary of your life insurance, your IRAs, your 401ks, so that your trust can divvy out the money to your family in the right way. But a lot of people have worried about some of these elections. What can I do, a rollover IRA? What happens if my trust is the beneficiary? Shouldn't I just put my kids as the beneficiary or my spouse? No. Put the trust as the beneficiary. And now, again, the IRS is continuing to make decisions in our favor, that we're still allowed to roll over those IRAs to our family members with the best tax strategy, believe it or not. So the IRS is a nice force there. So those couple little tidbits, you can read up more of them on the newsletter. Hopefully I didn't put anybody to sleep as they were driving down the road listening to the show today. Heaven forbid you're on a treadmill and I just, you know, you just kind of nodded and it just whipped you off the back of the treadmill. I know Jeff Thompson, my good bud back in Salt Lake, I know he listens to my show on the treadmill on a regular basis. So Jeff, be safe. Be careful. Let's move this show along so that you're not risking your life listening. All right. Now, let's move on to our topic of the hour. I am trying to get more quickly into the topic of our hour for the show and bring on our guests as soon as possible so that we can field more questions, field more email questions as well as live questions on the chat room. I'm going to open up my chat now for me at least. I know Lisa's in there already. And give a little shout out to Lisa if you get a chance. She does such a great job in the studio. That's Lisa Owen. She's fantastic. She's my little Robin, if you will, as part of our show here. She's great. So she does an awesome job. So check out the chat line if you're on your computer, if you're just listening from your phone. And you call in, you can press the number 1 and make a comment and ask a question today about protecting your home in the event of a lawsuit, or even talk on the chat line, or shoot me an email. I've got several questions that already came in via email. This is not the open forum radio show, so please keep your questions to the topic at hand today, and that is protecting your home in a lawsuit. But I welcome any questions via email, mark@markjkohler.com or mark@kkoslawyers.com. Please send me an email, or you can call us live and speak with us. That's number 646-200-4285. That's 646-200-4285. Now, I'm going to bring out a couple of our panelists now, and then I think we will bring on one of our other panelists a little later as we get into the some of these topics as they develop. So right now, we've got Jerem Bergeson on the show. As many of you know, Jerem is a regular contributor to the show. He's our attorney running the main corporate office of KKOS Lawyers back in Utah. He's licensed in 2 or 3 states as a lawyer, helps clients all around the country, has a really broad level of experience in the courtroom as well as helping with business planning and asset protection, and so we love to have him here on the show. Jerem, welcome.
Great to be here, Mark. Appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it. And also on our panel today, we have Lee Chen running the California Law Office of KKOS Lawyers. Lee Chen, also very broad level experience, but generally more focused in the courtroom. So we're excited to have him today as he talks about trying to collect money and sue people and how he can hopefully win. And he's gone after people's homes. So we're going to hear from him. Lee, welcome to the show again.
Hey, Mark. Thanks for having me on again.
You bet. Now, before we get started on a little lighter topic, have you guys got your picks for the World Cup? I just want to, you know, see if you've got someone you're following. It's the American craze right now. We're actually watching soccer. I don't know what our – you know what I think it is? It's just it's the baseball rebellion. I mean, I'm just – so many people that are not baseball fans are thinking, I got to watch something, so I might as well watch World Cup, so they're getting into it. I don't know. Is that what's going on for you guys?
It is for me. I'm probably one of a handful of people in the country that was happy when Portugal scored that goal at the end of regulation to tie that game. I lived in Portugal for 2 years. I know it's a much bigger deal there than it is here, so I was actually rooting for Portugal in that game, and yeah, I follow it pretty closely.
Oh, wow. Okay, very interesting. Lee, do you have a favorite?
Well, I the World Cup is really a slippery slope for me. You either try to stay away from it, or you get totally sucked in. And we had being in Southern California, we had like riots yesterday for when Mexico won. So I was on the other side of what Jaron was talking about on Sunday's game. So I can't, it's totally Murphy's Law in terms of the worst thing that can happen at the worst time happened. So.
There you go. Well, I am trying to, I don't have a favorite per se. I do want to see USA break out a group, but I'm just understanding the game more, and that's been fun for me. So I'm just going to say that. If anybody hasn't gone into soccer before, I am trying to get into it. The one thing I just wanted to do is get rid of offsides so the scores are a little higher. I love the offsides situation so they actually get a chance to score. But, oh, well, that's just me. I guess that takes away the real purity of the game. So anyway, okay, well, let's get on to our topic at hand. Fun, and so glad to have you guys here with me talking about protecting our home in the event of a lawsuit. Now, I wrote an article on this, and last night I stayed up late really working that article in depth. And so, folks, if you sometimes don't enjoy radio as much and you'd like to just cuddle up to a little printed article, please, again, check out the newsletter detail that I go through in protecting your home. Now, there's a variety of strategies, so let me just introduce the different strategies you can use when trying to protect your home, and then I want to focus in on some of those with our incredible panel here, and let's see where we go with this. I do know that in fact, I asked Jaron and Lee to come prepared on specifically on a couple topics. But let's start. Let me just list again what I think the six main strategies you have to protect in your home. And then we're going to go through these in detail. And, folks, I really encourage you to send me an email or call in live on the show if you have a question about these or an example or a situation in your life that you'd like to share. We first have the homestead exemption. We then have tenancy by the entirety, equity stripping, the Domestic Asset Protection Trust, or DAPT, taking yourself off title and putting the home in your spouse's name, and then the catch-all umbrella insurance. Now, I am excited to talk about these in specifics and dive into them in detail, but those are the six main strategies, and there's also some red herrings, some ones that we really should probably avoid and look out for. So we're going to go over those here probably throughout the show as they come up. But the homestead exemption, I'm going to throw this at Lee first. Lee, why don't you just, for those people that aren't familiar with the homestead exemption, would you mind just giving us just a couple sentences or two of what the homestead exemption is all about?
Well, Mark, the homestead exemption, it has both a tax and an asset protection component to it. But from the asset protection standpoint, it depends on the state. But most states allow you a certain amount of equity in your home that's completely immune from creditors. Okay, and you have to look at the particular state to see how much protection you get. Some people, some states go to a certain dollar amount. Some people say, hey, we're going to protect, the equity in your personal rent. It just depends on the state.
Great comment. An example of this is if someone were to sue you and they get a lien against your home for a big lawsuit. So say someone gets this terrible judgment against you and they'd lien your home. Folks, they would first have to put the home up for sale, cause a judge to force the sale of your home, then the mortgage would get paid off, the selling costs would be paid, and then anything that's left over, you as the homeowner would get the first check off the top of any equity up to that equity, that homestead exemption. In some states, it's $10,000 or $20,000. In some states, it's $300,000. And in some states, it's unlimited, where a creditor has no use of coming after your home because the equity is fully protected, like in a state like Texas or Florida. So, Lee, I like what you said, that it depends on state by state. But Jerem, it's not always automatic either. Can you talk maybe about what you might have to do actively to get that exemption?
Yeah, and that depends from state to state, too. Some states, the homestead exemption is automatic, and you don't need to do anything to claim it. In other states, you need to file with the county recorder or perhaps with a state agency. It just depends from state to state, what they call a homestead declaration, declaring that this piece of property, you know, your personal residence is indeed your personal residence, and it's the residence upon which you're going to claim the homestead exemption. They'll do that so that you can't try to say, well, you know, you can't try to claim more than one property as your homestead. Some states, you'll get an automatic homestead exemption, but there are additional rights that you have if you file a homestead declaration. So in lots of cases, it makes sense to file that homestead declaration. And then if you move, you can switch it to a different property. You just can't have two properties that you declare the homestead on at once.
Okay. And one side note here is I just had an email question from a Zach, one of our listeners, and he said, Mark, does the homestead exemption apply to my rental property? And the answer is no. The homestead exemption only applies to your primary residence. So we're going to use different strategies to protect a rental property, which is a topic for another show. But for your primary residence, this is where the homestead exemption is phenomenal. But again, it depends on your state. I don't want to make fun of anyone, but I do want to mention, Jerem, for your extended family in Mississippi, this does cover their mobile home. So if you do have cars out on blocks in front of that mobile home of yours, it will cover that. So it's kind of a good deal.
Spectacular. I'll inform my customers immediately.
There you go. All right. Sorry. Just messing around here. Okay, now let's move on. If any other questions, please pass them along, even via email. And if you've just joined us, we are talking about protecting our home in a potential lawsuit, and the homestead exemption is in every state, and you want to be able to research and discover what it is in your state. Very, very important. Now, for our next topic, I want to bring out our next panelist on our show, who's just a good friend of mine, and really, we're excited to bring him on the show here to talk about kind of a new announcement. This is, my friends, is Jarrett McCanus. He is an attorney with an LLM in taxation that he's working on. He should have that completed this year. He runs a law office in Hawaii. We are excited to be working with him in the very near future on expanding into Hawaii. We've got a strategic partnership with him. We'd love to refer more and more clients his direction, and we help support his office with a number of our paralegals. So he's just a very, very talented, and ladies, I want to say, very good-looking, fit man, but he is married, so I have to throw that out. But probably embarrassing now, but Jarrett, welcome to the show, Jarrett.
Hello, Mark. Thank you so much for having me, and Lee and Jerem, you as well. Hello.
Yeah, well, we're glad to have you here, and he finally brought some handsome, no offense, Jerem Lee, I'm not saying anything here, I'm just saying. So, Jarrett, no, it's so glad to have him here, and he's calling in early with the time zone. It's a little earlier in Hawaii for us, but, you know, I don't think any of us have sympathy for him. He can... we love it over there.
We try to get some work done during the daylight hours. It is hard, but we try to focus during these morning hours.
There you go. Just for a few hours, then it's off and play. Well, folks, the next topic we had on our list of ways to protect your home was the tenancy by the entirety. Tenancy by the entirety is a very unique strategy. It's not available in all the states. I'm going to pull off my handy copy of Mark J. Kohler's book, Lawyers Are Liars, here, and we'll look at some of the list of some of these states that are included. But, Jerem, if you wouldn't mind, why don't you give us a brief explanation of how tenancy by the entirety works, which is available in Hawaii, and I know you work with this all the time. So please tell us what this is all about.
Yeah, tenancy by the entireties, as you mentioned, is a special form of joint tenancy, and it's available to lawfully married couples. It's one of those forms of ownership that whenever we meet with new clients, that's the first thing we want to ask them, do you own your home or any other property as tenants by the entireties? And if you don't, why not? Because we always, there's so many benefits to it, we would like to see everyone be in a tenancy by the entirety form of ownership. The great things about it are you still get that right of survivorship. So if one spouse dies, then the property would automatically go to the surviving spouse, just like you would see in any other joint tenants ownership. You also have this smaller benefit. Some call it inalienability. Some call it a prohibition against, or one spouse cannot unilaterally transfer the property. So, you know, you can't wake up one day and find out that your wife quit claimed your home without you knowing about it or consenting to it. Those are smaller benefits that not all clients are worried about. But the main benefit, what makes tenancy by the entireties so advantageous, is this concept of separate creditor protection. And in essence, what it says is that whenever you have a creditor going after a spouse, that creditor cannot attach a lien or, you know, get a judgment against property held by tenancy by the entireties unless he or she, that creditor, has claims against both spouses.
Well, this is a big deal because this is great, I think, for, you know, a married couple where the husband or wife have maybe a more riskier occupation or a riskier business, or heaven forbid, they fall asleep at the wheel and get in a terrible car accident. The spouse at home is protected, or the house is protected while they're at home, so that they can't lose the house due to some mishap or screw up of the spouse. And that's really kind of what it boils down to. Now, Jerry, it's not forever. I mean, in some states it changes, doesn't it? It's whether if you get divorced, it disappears, or the spouse dies, it disappears. But sometimes it can even last divorce or death, right?
Yeah, in some cases, maybe it might be state specific. Again, in my experience as I practice, I've normally see that a divorce would sever that tenancy by the entirety automatically. There are two things that I wanted to bring up that's unique to Hawaii, and you want to take a look at your own state, or even the other panelists can chime in on this, and that is Hawaii recently changed their laws about 2 years ago to allow married couples to preserve the tenancy by the entirety ownership in their revocable living trust. Prior to that law change, clients had to choose between keeping their home under tenancy by the entireties or losing it and putting their home into a revocable living trust to protect it from probate. And so that was a tough decision to make, but you know, you would have to break the tenancy if you wanted to have the trust ownership. Now in Hawaii, you can actually own your home and any other type of property, and again, also personal property, so bank accounts, other types of investments, if the financial institution will allow you to do that. But you can hold all types of property tenancy by the entireties. With this new law, you can own your home tenancy by the entireties under trust. So you get the best of both worlds, and it's been great. But there's some legwork that you got to do to make that happen.
Well, this is right, goes right down the question that we had via email from Zach a moment ago, was this can apply to non-primary residence property? You can do this with even rental property?
You can, actually. You can have it your rental property, real property, real estate, and as I mentioned, even personal property like cash, and the bank, savings accounts, checking accounts, and other types of investments. You would have to work with the finance institution, however, in order to make that happen, and they would have a special change of ownership form to create that designation there on. But I have seen it work for all types of property.
Well, that's incredible. So I'm going to just quickly here, and this is a table in the back of my book, Lawyers or Liars. I'll just quickly read off. There's almost 20 states that have some form of this, But the big state or the states that have the full bar protection that's the best. Let me just read these off quickly for some of you I know that are just wondering. That's Delaware, District of Columbia, Florida, Hawaii, Indiana, Maryland, Michigan, Mississippi, Missouri, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Vermont, Virginia, and Wyoming in alphabetical order. Now, there's a few other states that have a modified version. But this is important, again, kind of like Jerem was talking about, where there has to be the homestead exemption sometimes has to be claimed. Same thing here with tenancy by the entirety. Jarrett, you just don't automatically get this. You've got to put this in the title verbiage, correct?
Correct, yeah. In my experience, some states have it by default, and you might want to look at the Florida statute, but I know here in Hawaii we do like to see that in the conveyance document, the deed itself, where it would say, you know, the client's name, the person's name, spouses, as husband and wife, as tenancy by the entireties, and it's got that four, lawyers call the unities, but there's all of those warranties available in that document. The reason why you would want that language in there, and it kind of goes back to this concept of when you file for bankruptcy or you're defending a lawsuit, of you want that preserved before the lawsuit or bankruptcy happens. In other words, if you're looking at filing for bankruptcy or you're getting sued, it's really difficult, if not impossible, to try to go back and then retitle your property as tenancy by the entireties, or go back and try to argue that, oh, by default, we had tenancy by the entireties, kind of under that fraudulent conveyance rules for transferring a property knowing that you're being sued.
Well, excellent point. Thank you. Well, folks, again, this is Jarrett McCannis. We'll share his. You're able to stay with us the rest of the show. Is that right, Jarrett?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I'll listen in. I'll chime in if you need me. But I love the show. I appreciate all that you do, Mark. This is a great opportunity for me, and we just appreciate our time here today.
Oh, thank you. Well, no, we'd love to have your feedback further on the show. And again, folks, as I mentioned earlier, December 13th, I will be in Hawaii doing our year-end workshop, and Jarrett will be there as well, and you'll get to hear from him, and he'll bring a few more good looks to the workshop experience rather than just me. I am growing out my hair right now. I'm trying to look a little more young with kind of a surfer long hair, but we'll see how long that lasts. My wife's not a fan. Okay, now let's move to our next topic in the list here, and that's equity stripping. Now, equity stripping involves placing a lien on your property so that when the public does, or, you know, someone wants to sue you, they do a search, and they see, oh, there's this lien against this guy's house. Well, I'm not going to sue him, or this guy isn't as worth as much as it seems because his million-dollar house has a first and a second and a third mortgage against it. I don't want to get in line with that. So someone might be discouraged from pursuing you in a lawsuit. And that's kind of the concept of equity stripping. Now, there's different degrees of how equity stripping could really work effectively. And I wanted to throw this out to Lee Chen, who is not only a lawyer, but also a licensed broker and handles a lot of real estate transactions for our clients. Again, folks, I'm going to give you the contact information for all of our panelists today before the end of the show. So if you want to reach out to them via email and set up a consult for a few minutes, everybody here on the show has different areas of expertise. But when it comes to real estate transactions and home equity lines of credit, or even an equity stripping strategy, Lee Chen has worked on these time and time again. Lee, why don't you tell us the difference between getting a bona fide HELOC from Wells Fargo or Bank of America versus just setting up a mysterious Wyoming company to lien my own equity in my home? What's the difference there? And you know, do they provide either one better protection versus another?
Well, for equity stripping, it really is a issue of perception. And so, you know, one of the things that you mentioned in your book is, you know, getting a HELOC for a certain amount of money, that total equity line is going to show up on the preliminary title report or whatever on the public records. They're not going to know, per se, if an attorney is looking at the records, how much or if anything has been actually drawn from that equity line. But it shows up as a total line. So if I'm an attorney, it's really a big deterrent. And if it's something from Wells Fargo, I'm going to be looking at it and saying, you know what, this looks like he may have taken cash out, maybe to do some renovations or something like that. I do get a lot of questions about, well, can I just have my put my brother on as a lender or something like that? And, I mean, you can do it. I mean, there's nothing stopping you. It's not illegal. But, again, it's the perception. Is it really going to deter somebody if the company is some company that they've never seen, or if their last name is the same as the name of the person you're wanting to sue? And, you know, when you get into court, you're going to be faced with the argument, is this a real lien or is it a sham? And so, you know, I would think if you're really looking to maximize that protection, you would want to go with a big name lender that that you know, the perception is it's going to be legitimate.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. I've just got a question here from a Dirk on our one of our listeners here, and Dirk says, Mark, which state do you recommend best to set up a company to lien my own property, Wyoming or New Mexico? Well, Dirk, that's a very unique question. Let me throw this out. So what Lee, if I may, gentlemen, let me field that question. Lee's talking about using a bona fide HELOC from a Bank of America Wells Fargo, which is going to look very legitimate. But it is true that you could set up an entity in a state like Wyoming or New Mexico and then lien your own house. It will look a little more questionable or precarious. Now, it still would probably dissuade a creditor to some degree because they know it's going to be work trying to get that house. There is a lien against it, but it may be very well illegitimate, and it's going to be easy to have a court throw out. But it's fight fire with fire, and you might want to play a little smoke and mirrors with potential creditors. And I tell clients, if you've got a lot of equity in your home, and you can't use a good homestand exemption, and you can't use tenancy by the entirety, and we're going to talk about a couple other strategies here in a minute, the equity stripping could be a good fit. But here's, Dirk, to answer your question, we're probably a bigger fan of Wyoming than New Mexico. The ongoing maintenance cost of Wyoming is a little more affordable, but both states are fantastic. It's very easy for us to disguise who the owner or manager is of the entity. And filing fees are very, very affordable, and they're much simpler and easier than Nevada, or even Utah would be a close second. But Nevada is so far down the list. Please, folks, again, as you know, I'm a huge non-advocate, when I say it, of just not using Nevada. Be careful with the Nevada strategy. I think Wyoming or New Mexico are fantastic. So, Dirk, you could go either way there. Guys, any Jerem or Jarrett, any comments on equity stripping that you'd like to make?
My only comment would be that I mean, yeah, if you can't get a HELOC for some reason and you want to use the equity stripping strategy, something may be better than nothing in the smoke and mirrors, and set up a company or have somebody that you trust, you know, have a lien there. That's going to dissuade people who aren't that serious or who aren't that well-funded. But people who are well-funded or who are serious are going to be able to get through kind of that appearance of a lien fairly easily. But they're still going to have to, you know, file a lawsuit and ask a judge to do it. So it's even a barrier to those people. So it can be a good fit. Just don't think, well, now I've got, you know, this Wyoming LLC that's put a lien on my property. I'm set. I don't need to worry about anything. That's not true.
Oh, great comment. And we got a question from Paul, one of our listeners here. This is I'm going to throw this at Lee. This is a really good question. He says, with a HELOC, can the cash be drawn after the lawsuit occurs? So, Lee, he says, in other words, keep the HELOC line open, have it recorded, but only draw against it if I get sued. Boy, if you were the Honorable Judge Lee Chen and you saw that in a case, what would you do? Boy, that's really up to the judge in this situation too, isn't it?
Yeah, that's going to be a classic lawyer answer. It depends. We're really going, the question is really a fraudulent conveyance question. When you're talking, it may be a good thing to talk about fraudulent conveyance because that's really, in any sort of asset protection strategy, fraudulent conveyance issues are always kind of on the outside, sort of kind of guiding everything that we do. And basically, a fraudulent conveyance is, are you making that transfer, making that withdrawal for the intent to defraud the creditor, to keep it away from a creditor? And, courts have come up with so many different factors that they're going to look at. They're going to look at your intent. They're going to look at, did you know that there was a claim going on? They're going to look, well, was there a legitimate purpose for the transfer? There is a lot of different factors that the court will consider in determining whether that withdrawal is going to be legitimate. But again, to go on Jeremy's point, this would be something that the creditor would have to go into court. They would have to prove these factors that to show that it was a fraudulent conveyance. So, a lot of the underlying what we're talking about here is it's a deterrent. Okay, so
Okay.
if you take it out, yes, could a creditor come back and challenge it? Possibly. Maybe might they be successful? It depends on the factors. But you've already taken the money out, and they're chasing after you.
Okay, well, let me throw one more. I'm going to just say this, Paul. This comes down to how good your lawyer is. Because if your lawyer's good, he's going to go into court and say, "Your Honor, come on, he was withdrawing cash for this. He does it on a regular basis. He was expanding his business. He was, remodeling his home. Come on, this wasn't a fraudulent transfer." And if the other lawyer's flat-footed, they're going to be like, "Well, yeah, but Your Honor, but it was just, he's trying to hide the money." And if they don't have a good enough argument, the lawyer could win that case for you. So I really do think it's kind of a, how good your lawyer is situation, because it could very well depend on the facts. Okay, now I want to bring up another issue here, another strategy, as our time is moving along quickly here. I want to bring up the Domestic Asset Protection Trust. Oh, these are amazing. We are becoming more and more of a fan of this strategy as every month goes by. More and more states are adopting Domestic Asset Protection Trust language. Also, based on the federal restatement of trust law and federal constitutional law, there's a good chance that your trust would be valid in any state. But this is a type of trust that could really protect your home and the equity in it. You don't have to play games with equity stripping. The homestead exemption could be crappy, and you don't have tenancy by the entirety. An example of this, frankly, is a California or Arizona or even a Utah situation, because they have terrible homestead exemption. There's no tenancy by the entirety. And if you've got a million-dollar home with a ton of equity in it, what are you going to do? Well, recently, our amazing Jerem Bergeson went to a domestic asset protection conference. Jerem, tell us what's going on with these bad boys. Are they really working for people?
Well, they really are. And just to explain quickly, I mean, an asset protection trust or a domestic asset protection trust, which just means that it's an asset protection trust that's in the United States, it's a trust where, with these trusts, you can create and fund what is really an irrevocable trust with your own property. And you can also be the beneficiary of the trust. And in that case, if you've got the right kind of asset protection trust that's set up the right way under the statute, then the assets that you put into that asset protection trust or domestic asset protection trust, or we call it a DAPT, those assets are not going to be reachable by a creditor. As long as you've, fulfilled the requirements of the state statute, that your future creditors, they're not going to be able to attach the trust property. They're not going to be able to force distributions from the trusts. trust to the trust creator. They're not going to be able to require the trustees to pay directly to a creditor any distributions that would otherwise be made to the trust creator. They were going to have to wait until if and when the trust actually distributes something to the trust beneficiary, who is also the trust creator. The statutes in certain states, Nevada being one of them, have been on board with this for quite some time. But we actually, the reason I went to that conference is that here in the state of Utah, Utah actually just within the last year amended its statute. It's had a Utah Asset Protection Trust for a while, but the statute was radically changed late last year. And now Utah really is an excellent choice for an asset protection trust.
Well, and on this note of states, there's now 14 states. It changes every year. I haven't done the recent research in the last few months to see what we're looking at this year. But Jarrett, over there in Hawaii, these are valid in Hawaii as well. The Domestic Asset Protection Trust was updated almost 3 years ago. So this is something you're helping even clients with in Hawaii.
Yep, absolutely. Hawaii did have originally enact a Hawaii Asset Protection Trust law. It was the Hawaii Permitted Transfers and Trust Act, and it was amended in 2011, I believe, to offer a little bit more flexibility in what you can transfer and just trying to keep up with the other states. It's not in the same league as some of the other states that we have found, but it's getting there. And it's still kind of relatively new concept here in Hawaii. So I would say Hawaii is trying to keep up with the mainland states in this area. As far as can these work in Hawaii, you know, we've got the statute, but we have not litigated them, or have I seen a lot of these trusts challenged? That's the hard part, is watching these things come through and how they're actually hold up in court, you know.
Well, and you know what? It's funny you bring that up, Jarrett. I got a couple emails that just came through. First, one of our listeners in Hawaii, Bill, just said, Bill and Kathy, love you guys, just said, congrats on announcing the Hawaii connection. So, Jarrett, I've got to introduce you to these wonderful clients of mine, and I'm so excited to have a couple events this before the fall, introducing both of our client groups to each other. Jarrett's just amazing. So, Bill and Kathy, I'm excited to introduce you. But I had another email from a Colleen, and she asked, "Have these been upheld in court?" Now, this is exactly what Jarrett just brought up, and I want to just interject if I could, and I'm, you know, I want to hear what any of you have to say as well, is that this is kind of the LLC quandary. 30 years ago, when limited liability companies, LLCs, came out, there was this kind of secondary discussion of, oh, are they really valid? I mean, they just came out, so they haven't been court tested. Don't trust them. Don't trust them. Well, folks, once an LLC statute was passed, it's the law. It doesn't have to go through court to be proven that it's the law per se. And it certainly dissuaded millions of, you know, of lawsuits over the years when people realized that folks had a limited liability company or LLC. And I really feel the same thing is appropriate here to talk about with the Domestic Asset Protection Trust. I think one reason why Jarrett and all of us aren't seeing them litigated as much is because creditors are saying, man, do I really want to burn $100,000 in all this legal fee just to test a law that's on the books? It's not worth it. And so the Domestic Asset Protection Trust is doing exactly what it's supposed to do, and that is to tell creditors, stay away. And if they don't have deep enough pockets, they're going to stay away. And so I don't care what state you're at in the country, you can implement a Domestic Asset Protection Trust and make it a bear for a creditor to get at your home. So Colleen, I just want to tell you, don't stress about them not being tested in court. They're the law on the books of so many states now. It's going to be tough for any creditor to get at them. Any thoughts, gentlemen? Anything on that?
I would just say that, yeah, as to assets in any state, let's say you set up a Utah Asset Protection Trust, but you put your personal residence in California in this Utah Asset Protection Trust, and let's say maybe a creditor wants to try to get at that house, they're going to have to convince the court in California that that court in California should disregard Utah law as to the asset protection trust. a law that is valid, a law that's been enacted by the state legislature, signed by the governor in that state, they're going to be asking the court in California to disregard that Utah statute. And there's full faith and credit clause and other strong arguments that California should honor that Utah law. So you've at the very least put the creditor in a position where they're going to have to file an expensive, drawn-out, technically difficult lawsuit in order to get at that asset. Can I guarantee you that they won't win at the end of the day? No, I can't guarantee that. But I can pretty much guarantee that you are going to make that creditor think at least twice, if not more than that, about actually filing that lawsuit and coming after your personal residence.
You know, and on this note, I want to highlight a guest we've had on the show before, Jay Adkinson, who is, I think, one of the foremost attorneys in the country on asset protection. I quoted him in my book, and he's phenomenal. And if you go out and Google asset protection and domestic asset protection trust, he's written articles for all the major news outlets. In preparation for today's show, I saw him on a finance blog. And Jay said the same thing that Jerem, you just said, and that is that if someone's got deep enough pockets and is mad enough and you've done something wrong that's serious enough, people are going to blow through pretty much any strategy you have unless it's buried in a 401k somewhere. And that's even, you know, O.J. Simpson is a very rare case of having complete protection in any scenario. It is very, very difficult. But Jay even himself admitted that with any of these strategies, what you're doing is creating barriers. And it makes those barriers very difficult to overcome if your creditor doesn't have enough money to come after you. So that's the theory of my Lawyers Are Liars book, too, is the barriers. Okay, now I want to bring up another strategy here in our last 10 minutes here. And this is something that Lee Chen has studied and also gone to court on many times. And that is going after someone that said, hey, you can't get my home. My name's not even on title. I put my spouse's name on title. And you're suing me. I don't even own the home. I just live there. My spouse owns the home. Very interesting argument. Lee, what are your thoughts on taking your name off title and putting your spouse on title?
Well, and I'm just going to talk asset protection now, not family law.
Not divorce law. Don't bring up divorce.
Not divorce
law. Not a good one.
As for a strategy, putting the strategy is, should we put title in our residence in the name of the spouse that has less risk? And in general, that is something that would probably work if you're in one of the common law states. Okay. If people don't know, in general, in terms of marital property, there's two types of jurisdictions. You have community property states, and then you have common law states. Okay. And the community property states are mainly on the West Coast. It's Arizona, California, Idaho, Louisiana, Nevada, New Mexico, Texas, Washington, and Wisconsin. If you're in a community property state, it's going to be a little bit more difficult to do that. The actual rules are all over the place. Each state seems to have their own different standard for what a creditor can get from the other spouse. But if you're in a common law state, any other state other than the states that I just mentioned, it would probably be a good strategy to put your property in the name of the spouse that has less risk. Now, again, if your spouse that has less risk goes off and, you know, gets into an accident, which is always a possibility, well, then you have an issue because now everything's in the spouse's name.
Yeah, go ahead, Leaf. Go ahead and finish.
No, I was just going to say, so, it can work in certain situations, but it's certainly not foolproof. There's pros and cons to it.
Yeah, and I think if someone is not really interested in the domestic asset protection trust, you do have significant equity in your home, and you may do a little bit of equity stripping and put it in your spouse's name, and I have no problem with that. Again, it's all about barriers. You're making it harder for a creditor. I'll give you that. These folks in community property estates, you've got to be more cautious. And also, if your marriage is on the rocks, you may want to talk to a family law attorney before you start moving your assets around into other, you know, your spouse's name. Just FYI, little Tiger Woods, you know, protection there. You might want to think about
that. And Mark, I do want to add that, so for common law states, it would be a good idea, you know, and also one of the last thing that you talked about, you know, if you're going to put it in one spouse's name, you might want to, you know, insure a little bit more for that spouse that has a name for like cars and stuff like that. But for community property states, if you are in one of those states, usually what I recommend in those situations, if you want to kind of get the same result, to put it in the spouse's name and kind of shift the liability to that spouse, what I normally recommend in those situations is some sort of marital agreement, an agreement between the spouses that says, hey, this is going to be one spouse's separate property. It's not mine. The spouse, you know, takes care of it, everything. It's not in my estate. So for the community property states, we might do something like that.
Yeah, and there again, family law really plays a factor when you're talking about a separate property agreement, a postnuptial agreement, and you're literally giving that spouse that asset. And if divorce occurs, that agreement's just as binding as if there was a lawsuit. So you're going to want to be really cautious. Okay, now in our last 5 minutes here or so, I want to quickly bring up a couple topics, and that is umbrella insurance. Easy schmeasy, wonderful, affordable. I think all of us should be looking at umbrella insurance as another major method to protect the equity in our home and against uninsured motorists and potential claims in one or two rental properties. The list goes on and on. Umbrella insurance for $1 million, $2 million can be very, very effective. Read the fine print, understand what the benefits really are of the policy, what the exclusions are. Do an annual review with your insurance agent, but without beating it up too much here, I think all of us should be looking at umbrella insurance, especially if you have a business, a home, or rental property. A few cautionary points. Watch out for the irrevocable trust that's not ADAPT, but these irrevocable trusts that are out there where you're going to literally gift the property to extended family into some irrevocable trust that takes complete control away from you. There may be tax return ramifications, gifting ramifications. Be cautious. And be careful putting your own home into an LLC. We rarely recommend that you put your own home into an LLC because a limited liability company is really a vehicle for business assets, not your home. So be cautious there. Now, before I let you guys go, any final comments? And let's go with Jarrett over in Hawaii first. Jarrett, please give people out your contact information for many of our listeners that are in Hawaii. How do they find you? And any final words on this asset protection topic you'd like to give us?
No, I think it's a case-by-case analysis, that it's important that you talk to your attorney, that you sit down with them and really look at all of the different options available to you, because it's not going to be a one-size-fits-all for each client. I think as we can bring a conclusion to that, that's what I took away from today's show. So it might be a combination of any of all those options that we discussed.
Great point.
Yeah, I'm downtown. I'm in Honolulu, Hawaii. We serve clients all on all islands. You can reach me at 808 area code 377-0180. You can look us up on the internet at www.macanaslaw.com, macanaslaw.com. And again, I'm Jarrett McConnis. I appreciate working with you, Mark. You guys are great. Thank you for having me on the show. Look forward to having you here in the island soon.
Oh, yes. Jarrett, thank you so much. We're going to be moving accounting services over there as well as legal services in the future and working even more closely with you. Jerem, as usual, what's your email? Throw it out as if people didn't know you well enough.
Oh, that's right. International superstar. Anyway, it's Jarom, J-A-R-O-M as in Mary, at kkoslawyers.com. I'm in the Cedar City office, but helping clients all across the country. So,
I love it. Lee, any final words and your email, please?
Mark, just I would say these asset protection strategies are helpful, but the most important thing is do it before you need to do it. Before the need comes, because when the need comes, then we have an extra complication. So great to be on the show. My email address is Lee, L-E-E, at kkoslawyers.com.
All right. Thank you so much, Lee. You're awesome. We appreciate you being here. And everyone, thank you so much for spending some time with us today. We hope that it was well worth it. And we are grateful to be here with you each week on The Mark Kohler Show. I'll be here next Tuesday at 11 a.m., and we're going to be talking about penny stock trading, and what you can do even inside your IRA, 401k, HSA, and just taking a few dollars and turning them into a lot of dollars. So come check it out next week when we're going to talk about penny stock. Have a great week. Keep living the American dream.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.